You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. There are four top candidates vying for the late Senator Dianne Feinstein's Senate seat. And last night, for the first time, Democratic Congressmembers Adam Schiff, Katie Porter, and Barbara Lee took the debate stage alongside Republican Steve Garvey, a former baseball player for the Dodgers and Padres. With less than 2 months until the primary, it's still a relatively close race. And in California, the top two candidates moved to the general election in November, regardless of party. The latest Berkeley IGS poll among likely voters, released earlier this month, shows Adam Schiff in the lead at 21%, Katie Porter in second at 17%, Republican Steve Garvey at 13%, and Barbara Lee with 9% of support. But there's still 21% of likely voters who remain undecided, which is the equivalent to Schiff's support. So did this debate last night move the needle? It was held at USC and sponsored by Politico, with senior political reporter Melanie Mason, its co-moderator. Melanie joins us now with some analysis. Welcome. Good job last night, Melanie.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
It's a tough thing to be a moderator on for a debate. 100%. Did it go as you envisioned?
I joke. I was like kind of in a fugue state the whole time. After 90 minutes, I was like, did that just happen? I am very much a print reporter. And so just the whole television aspect of it all, it felt almost surreal. But I would say, like, you know, now having a couple of hours to digest and play back, I'm pretty happy with how it went. You know, we had a lot of topics that we wanted to cover. There were a lot of sort of points that we wanted to get to. And it still managed to be comprehensive and allowing some of those more feisty exchanges that I think are the things that everybody talks about the next day. So, I don't have any things that I'm replaying in my head thinking, oh, I should have done that instead. So that's pretty good.
When you were going over the topics with your co-moderator, Alex Michelson, he is an anchor at Fox 11 in Los Angeles. What did you want to get out of the first Senate debate for California?
I think the thing that we really were cognizant of was that this was the first time that all four candidates were going to be on stage together. And so this was kind of, for most people's opportunity to really tune into this debate, this race for the first time and get a sense for all these candidates. So while us political junkies know these candidates, particularly the elected members of Congress, very well, we've been following them for years, the general public doesn't. And so the balance that we wanted to strike was to allow for some introduction, to allow for the general public to get to know these candidates really for the first time on stage, but also to press them to try to make some news, to try to get them to refine or clarify some of the points that they have been making during this campaign. So it's a real balancing act between some of these more broader questions about issues that Californians care about, and then getting down to maybe more of the pointed political news of the day and getting them to weigh in there.
Yeah, I mean, you obviously covered broad topics, homelessness, you know, immigration, but you also got more nuance as well when talking about earmarks or the farm bill, you know, to really serve, you know, people who live all over the state. It's a huge state. And when it comes to the three Democratic candidates, I thought it was a good opportunity for them to differentiate themselves since they're all congressional members. And for Steve Garvey, I think for a lot of people, it's people kind of hearing him speak on political matters for the very first time. He is the Republican candidate, doesn't come with a political track record. So I just want to give listeners a sense of where he's coming from. And I'm going to play a clip and just let it breathe a little bit on why the former baseball player wants to be a California senator. And this is him responding to the question that you asked, having never served or wanting to give specifics about issues until after the primary. How can Californians know what they're getting with Steve Garvey? And this is his response.
I have said that I'm new. I needed to explore California. I needed to talk to the people. I needed to hear from them, their feelings about their elected officials. And that's what I've done. And policy for me is position. I've taken strong positions, especially on the homeless and what should be done. We should do a strong audit on that. I've talked about, the economy and inflation, rapid spending. Let's get back to energy that's affordable. I've talked about the border, the crisis at the border. Let's close the border. Let's take a deep breath. We have a pathway to citizenship. Let's enforce it. Crime. Let's get crime off the streets. Let's fund the police. Let's make sure that they keep our neighborhoods and our communities safe. I mean, that's policy, but it's my position. And by tomorrow, you'll see a lot more.
When I was listening to him speak and watching him speak, you know, he kind of reminded me of Ronald Reagan. What did you get from his performance at the debate last night?
The Reagan analogy, I think, is a really apt one. That was the one that was running through my head, too. It almost felt like there was kind of a nostalgia for what a Republican politician looked like, you know, decades ago. That was somebody who talked about optimism, who talked about, you know, sort of old, kind of more traditional values, perhaps, free markets, things like that, getting away from some of the more divisive areas that we've seen in our current politics. And so I think if there are people that are nostalgic for at least what they remember of those politics back in the day, which maybe wasn't totally what it was in reality, that might really have resonated, right? I mean, Garvey himself is somewhat of a nostalgic figure. He's this baseball legend. If you grew up watching, you know, the Dodgers or the Padres, or even if you weren't watching him play in real time, he's been for the past however many decades kind of this symbol of MLB here in California. And so I think that in some ways he's running on more of this persona than anything else, which is, don't you want your politician to be somebody who feels likable, who doesn't feel divisive, who isn't going to be yelling at the other side? And look, there's something to be said for that. I mean, I do think that people are really fed up with what is a lot of negative partisanship in politics these days. So I understand how, as a strategy, he might see that as appealing to voters. I think that the question is can you then take that and articulate what that means for what you would do in the job as senator? And I think that that was a place where he struggled a little bit more, was sort of, instead of just being an avatar for maybe people's frustrations with politics, really presenting a, and here's how I would act in office if you chose me.
Yeah, he was light on details. And I think it even came to who he would vote for in the presidential race. I mean, he has voted for former President Trump twice, but he wouldn't commit on the debate stage whether he would vote for Trump a third time. And I want to play this clip because this is one of the more heated exchanges. I mean, the three Democrats on the stage obviously, you know, took issue with Garvey. So let's listen to him being questioned on, you know, whether he would support Donald Trump or Joe Biden as president.
At this point, Donald Trump has been president. Joe Biden has been president. We've seen both of them as president. Are you still undecided if the choice is Donald Trump versus Joe Biden? As you suggested to Politico, you may vote for Joe Biden. How are you undecided, and what would make that decision for you?
I didn't say that.
Okay, so what will clarify your view then?
When the time comes, I'll do exactly what I said to you. I will look at the two opponents. I will determine what they did, and at that time, I will make my choice. I don't believe Joe Biden has been good for this country. I heard it said that that Trump was terrible for the world, right?
Yeah.
He was.
That we were less safe. We were safer,
yeah,
more under him than we are under Biden. We're on three different platforms throughout the world.
So he's, Congressmember, he's arguing that that we were safer under President Trump. What do you make of what he just said, and what's your response?
Well, California, I think what they say is true. Once a Dodger, always a Dodger. He just chewed up 2.5 minutes of the time to talk about substantive issues in this debate and refused to answer the question. Ballots go out in 6 weeks, Mr. Garvey. This is not the minor leagues. Who will you vote for?
And that is Katie Porter challenging Steve Garvey. I mean, aside from the fact that he wouldn't go on the record or commit to who he would vote for, do you think that this is just pure strategy just to get through to the top two?
You know, I mean, there might be some sincerity behind it. I mean, I think it feels almost a little bit quaint now, but a notion that like your vote is your personal private expression, you know, that's a thing about our democracy is we have secret ballots. You don't have to say who you voted for. And so maybe that is something that he truly believes. But it also does really feel like there's some political calculus behind it. But I have to tell you, it's a tough political calculus to figure out. It looks like he really has his eye squarely on the electorate in November, the general election. You look at somebody like President Trump, he's not very popular overall in this state. He lost very handily to Joe Biden in 2020. And so he's thinking if he could win in November, he needs to win over people who are not Trump voters. But before November comes March, in the March primary, he has to get past the primary first. And the fact that he seems so squishy on where he what he feels about Trump will not resonate with Republican voters in this state. Remember, they have reason to turn out in the primary because there's a presidential primary on the ballot there among the Republicans. So if you're a Trump supporter listening to him speak and he's so squishy about it, what is going to motivate you to vote for him in March? And so this is this needle that he's trying to thread. And, you know, the old axiom in politics is that you kind of pander to your base in the primary and then you move to the center for the general. He seems to be trying to skip that part and going straight to the center. And maybe he thinks that just having the Republican behind his name is enough to consolidate that vote to get into the top two. But it's going to be an interesting math equation to get there.
Yeah, and it's important to just remind people that when it comes to voter registration, no party preference rivals the Republican Party in California. So maybe that's, you know, the strategy that he's using to try and pull people who are no party preference. You know, he also, on the debate stage, and I'm focusing on him because it's kind of like an introduction to him as a candidate, and this is the last clip I'm going to play of him. You know, he kind of lumped the three Democratic candidates all together, you know, as individuals. And there's this exchange about homelessness. And I want to play it because it captures the dynamic of that night. You know, the three Democratic candidates, they did go after Garvey, but Garvey also lumped them all together as the problem.
When was the last time any of you went to the inner city? Actually walked up to the homeless, as I have over these last 3 weeks. I've gone to San Diego and Los Angeles and Sacramento. And actually, because this is part of, you know, I'm not a politician, but I needed to talk to the people of the city. I needed to talk to the homeless, went up to them and touched them and listened to them. And you know what? They looked at me and they said, "You're the first time anybody's come up and asked us about our life." The homeless man who spent 5 years on the street in Sacramento. They don't get it. When I go back to the Senate, a year from now, when I'm your next elected U.S. Senator from California, the first thing I'll do is an audit. Where have the $30 billion the federal government has spent? And by the way, these are career politicians that talk about Washington being dysfunctional.
Thank you, Mr. Garvey.
You're Washington.
I know I'm the youngest person on this stage, but my career didn't just last 5 years. I was elected to Congress 5 years ago. I am not a career politician, but I'm proud of the work I've done in Congress.
Congressman, we need to let Mr. Schiff get in there.
His response was so patronizing, I've just got to say, as somebody who's been unsheltered, I cannot believe how he described his walk and touching and being there with the homeless. Come on, Mr.
First of all, and this will be my one and only baseball analogy for the evening.
Okay.
Mr. Garvey, I'm sorry, that was a total swing and a miss. That was a total whiff of an answer. And I say that, you know, credit where credit is due, you are a hell of a ball player.
All right. So that was at first Katie Porter and then Barbara Lee and then finally with Adam Schiff. There were a lot of baseball references, Melanie. What did you make of those? I would imagine maybe you would have expected them, but did you enjoy them?
We definitely expected them. I will say that as a personal Dodger fan, I'm from Los Angeles. I am a diehard Dodger fan. When Katie Porter, you know, used Dodger as an insult to Steve Garvey, there was a part of me that cringed a little bit. But that's my own baseball biases coming through. But yeah, I mean, look, obviously we were expecting some puns. Some were better than others. But I think that what was interesting in that clip is, to your point, he was lumping all three of those Democrats together as career politicians. There's no, you know, nobody is ever going to get dinged with ragging on Washington, ragging on politicians, because Congress politicians typically not very popular. I did think it was interesting then to see even Congresswoman Porter, who does serve in Congress, trying to actually take a similar line and accuse her other two Democratic rivals who have been in Congress longer as they're the Washington establishment. They're Washington. I may have, you know, representative as my title, but I also don't represent kind of the typical politician. So you can see threads of Garvey's strategy in what Porter was saying as well. And maybe that's not something we would have anticipated going into this debate.
Moving to the three Democratic candidates, I mean, do you think that they were successful in becoming individuals on the stage? I mean, they're all congressional colleagues.
It's tough because because they vote together so much, trying to tease out the policy differences between them, it means either going real deep into the weeds or on some major issues. I mean, obviously, the Israel-Hamas war is one place where we do see some serious differentiation. And I think that was an area in particular where you saw Congresswoman Barbara Lee, who was the first to call for an immediate and permanent ceasefire and really sort of tap into what is sort of the position of most of the progressive flank of the Democratic Party at this point. I felt like she really got energized in that issue, in that question. And I think she saw that as a moment for her to break away from her other two Democrats. And I think that the question of earmarks was kind of an interesting and maybe unexpected way that we saw Congresswoman Porter trying to differentiate herself. I mean, that's a pretty wonky procedural conversation about directed spending that, you know, Congress members can request for their districts. But I think what it was trying to do when she brings this up as an issue is put some daylight between her and these other two Democrats to say, here's how I view how Washington works, and I would do it differently. So there were these choice moments where, yes, they would find the issue and put daylight between them and the other Democrats. But the truth is as we mentioned sort of at the start of the debate, they vote together 90% of the time or more. The truth is that if any of them get elected to the Senate, we can expect that they will vote very similarly. So it's more a question of like what their priorities are and how they would approach the job that I think is what is going to distinguish a Senator Schiff from a Senator Porter from a Senator Lee.
Yeah, which makes it difficult when they're all running against each other for one position. I think one of the loudest examples of trying to differentiate themselves from each other involves Katie Porter, currently polling in second, and criticizing Adam Schiff when it comes to oil. So let's take a listen to that.
Representative Schiff, I didn't realize how much dirty money you took until I was running against you. You've taken money from big oil, big pharma, cable companies, and other industries.
Okay. All right, we're going to keep moving.
Representative Schiff may have prosecuted big oil companies before he came to Congress, but when he got to Congress, he cashed checks from companies like BP, from fossil fuel companies. I have delivered results on climate in my few years in Congress. I have raised the rate. My legislation to raise the rate on polluters when they drill on our public lands was signed into law.
I gave that money to you, Katie Porter. And I was
I wasn't doing it. In office and when the you only, were taking fossil
the only
fuel.
Response I got was thank you. But look, at the end of the day, it's about what have you gotten done? I didn't hear anything from Representative Porter about anything she's actually accomplished.
You know, when it comes to that exchange, and I just think overall, like any, I mean, that wasn't the only kind of maybe jab that Katie Porter tried. I mean, I know that she criticized Adam Schiff on abortion as well, other issues as well. But he is currently polling in first. I mean, he appeared to stay calm, firm, collected. I mean, how do you think his performance was last night?
I think what Congressman Schiff had to do was make no major errors. And he didn't. I think he had a very smooth debate. I think that he was able to parry the questions pretty well. I think that he was able to have a few key moments. Did he win over voters that maybe weren't going to be on his side? I'm not so sure. But did he lose voters that were with him that are giving him his polling lead right now? I don't think so. So I think that if you're, you know, if you have the lead, you're playing to hold on to the lead. And I think that he accomplished that. And I think that the question was Katie Porter, in being sort of more scrappy, did she maybe pull away voters from him, or perhaps did she win over voters who were perhaps thinking about Congresswoman Lee, thinking of them as maybe the two progressive choices in the race? And is that going to be enough for her to consolidate enough votes to get into that top two?
When it comes to Congressmember Barbara Lee, I mean, who's currently polling in fourth, she is the most senior Congressmember. Do you think this debate helped her?
You know, I think that that really remains to be seen. I'm going to be really interested to see the next round of polling. And more importantly, I think if she gets any boost in fundraising, because her biggest problem is that she needs to get her name and her message out there. Congressman Schiff has so much money. He just has this gigantic, he has $35 million on hand as of the end of the year, this war chest. And we see he's already booked $10 million in airtime between now and the primary. He's going to be able to blanket the state with his message. Congressman Porter doesn't have quite as much money, but still a pretty healthy fundraising. She's up on air and she's advertising. Congresswoman Lee needs the type of resources in order to get her message out there. I think that she could say that positions like what she has on the ceasefire, for example, or a Medicare for All position or other areas might really resonate with the progressive part of this state, which is a pretty sizable one in a state as Democratic as California. But if they don't hear her message or they don't get to know that she's a viable candidate in this race, then that doesn't really get her anywhere. So maybe she saw an outpouring in small dollar donations last night. We haven't heard that yet from the campaign, but you know, if they want to leak any fundraising numbers, I'm happy to take them. But that, I think, to me is the big question for her going forward.
Finally, Melanie, you know, those 90 minutes, it went by really fast. You know, should voters be satisfied with what these candidates had to say?
Well, I think voters should never be satisfied. They should always be asking for more information from their candidates. And the good news is that we know that there are going to be additional debates. I believe that I saw that the next one will be on February 12th. So there is going to be more opportunity. But I also think that voters should be pressing them, you know, going to campaign events, pressing them to do more interviews. This is a very self-interested pitch to, you know, appeal to their politicians, to talk to journalists more. I would like to think that in this debate, there was a lot of information that people got that could help them shape their choices. But my feeling is the more information, the better, the more opportunity for them to air out these differences and to sell their ideas, the better. And so I'm looking forward to seeing what happens in the next debate.
Melanie, thanks for making the time for us. I know it's been a busy 24 hours for you.
I'm going to go take a nap. Thank you.
Well deserved. Melanie Mason is a senior political reporter with Politico who co-moderated the first Senate debate last night among the four leading candidates, Democratic Congress members Adam Schiff, Katie Porter, Barbara Lee, as well as Republican Steve Garvey. Up next, the nation's oldest and most prestigious science competition is spotlighting local talent. We'll meet a Mira Loma High School student and learn about his original research. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.